Hello and welcome to Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else, a series of conversations with innovative educators at colleges and universities across the country. I'm Elizabeth Yost-Hammer, Director of the Center for the Advancement of Teaching at Xavier University of Louisiana. And now, let's talk about teaching, learning, and everything else. Hello. Today we are talking to Dr. Ray Barnhart. He's a professor of cross-cultural studies and the director of the Alaska Native Knowledge Network at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. He has a PhD in anthropology and has published on the issue of teaching across cultures, which is what we're talking about today. Hello, Dr. Barnhart. Thank you for speaking with us.
Good morning.
Good morning and good afternoon here. I thought I would just start by asking you to tell us a little bit about your own background and your own students that led you to this interest in teaching across cultures.
Depending on how one sees things, all teaching, I suppose, could be classified as teaching across cultures because they all bring different constellation of experiences. But I started out teaching when I completed my undergraduate degree in mathematics and got a high school teaching credential. So I taught high school math in Baltimore, Maryland for a few years in an inner city school where I encountered students whose background certainly was different than my own. And had to figure out how I would approach things as a teacher to make algebra and geometry and so on relevant to the students. And at that time, this is back in the 1960s, at that time there wasn't a lot of attention being given to the cultural background of students and issues associated with that. So went on to graduate school to better understand the issues involved and what one might do about it, which is what led me to anthropology and linking and utilizing anthropology as a framework for looking at what goes on in schools and communities as far as education is concerned. When I completed my graduate work at the University of Oregon, I took a position here at the University of Alaska Fairbanks in 1970 and began working on the first effort to prepare Alaska Natives as teachers. There were a total of 6 Alaska Natives in the entire state at the time. Our task was to bring what amounted to the first generation of Native teachers into the system. And I've been working on variations on that theme ever since, trying to sort out what that means for a Native person to assume a teaching position. And the kind of pedagogical practices that that can be utilized by Native and non-Native teachers to make education meaningful and relevant to the students. So that's pretty much what I'm still doing in different arenas within the state and nationally.
But now, when you say there were only 6 Alaska Native teachers, I mean, is this for secondary schools or college? I mean, can you expand on that one?
K-12.
Okay. And so there was the only Native teachers, and then all the rest were
imported from elsewhere. And we still import approximately 80% of teachers that teach in Alaska come from outside of Alaska.
So
turnover rate, which is an ongoing problem.
I'm sorry, I didn't miss the last point.
We have a high turnover rate. Teachers, particularly in the rural schools, the 30 an average of 30-some percent turnover rate. So the challenge of preparing teachers to be able to understand the cultural background that the students they're working with come from is an ongoing task. And the article, Teaching Learning Across Cultures, was intended to address some of the elements associated with that task.
Yes, it seems like maybe you've got a double whammy then if you're teaching Native students and then you're also teaching non-Native teachers to work with Native students. Do you deal with it from both angles?
Exactly, yes. And it's a different process between the two, and it works best when we can bring the two groups together in a common endeavor. Each can learn from the other, and that's one of the elements that that we've tried to incorporate into our teacher education program.
We'll link to your article on our website, on our podcast website, so that listeners can look at your article. But one thing that I was struck with as I was looking at this was you start with the importance of first impressions. And I was wondering if you could expand on that above what's in the article. You know, what are – you kind of talk about the successful first impression, but are there also pitfalls, you know, that we can make with our first impressions?
Yes, certainly. And the impressions work both ways. Teachers come into a village setting, and I'm referring primarily to village schools. So if you go to the schools in Fairbanks or Anchorage, the urban areas, they look pretty much like schools in any place else. But in the rural areas, it's quite different. And when teachers get off the plane, which is the only way to get to most of the communities, people in the community size them up based on prior experience with other teachers. And there have been a lot of teachers who have come and gone from these communities. So community members have their own impressions of what kind of person. Very quickly, once a person comes into the community, they sort out what kind of person it is, whether it's someone who's going to be able to work with them and become part of the community, or someone who will pretty much stand apart and remain only associated with the school. So to establish a long-term relationship in a community, you have to get involved in life of the community, not in a directive way where you're telling people what to do, but just participating and showing respect for the things that make up life in that community. And what I indicated in the article, and we encourage teachers to do, is to go to the community, if it's a new community that they haven't been to before, to go there as far in advance as possible, preferably a month or so in advance, and just get to know people and have provide an opportunity for them to get to know you as a person rather than as a teacher, so they get to know you on personal terms, which then carry over to their professional relationships with you. So there are lots of tips on how to do that and what it means, but the typical experience of non-Native teachers going into a Native community is the first year or two, the teacher is probably learning more about themselves and about the community that they're working in and the students they're working with than the students are learning from them. So there's a getting acquainted process that takes place over the course of the first year or two. And if we have a 30-some percent turnover rate, on the average, you're looking at new teachers every 3 years in a school. And if it takes them 2 years to get up to speed, you're only getting 1 year of really productive work out of them. So what we've been doing is developing orientation programs to accelerate that getting acquainted process, taking teachers out into fish camps, traditional settings where people are doing their customary activities, and helping teachers understand how they can draw upon the expertise and the knowledge that's in the community as a way to liven up the curriculum. So it's a long-term process. And when you do that right, on the average, teachers end up staying a couple of years longer, 5 years instead of 3 years, and you get that much more beneficial return from the effort.
So it actually helps with retention a little bit longer while at the same time. I wonder if you could speak a little bit about maybe, you know, what you were just speaking about, but apply it to another population besides Alaska. Like you mentioned teaching at an inner city school. I'm thinking about Hispanic serving institutions or historically Black institutions. What might, you know, where you're not going into a rural community where, you know, getting there a month in advance might help, in an urban one where it's harder maybe to, what might your advice be for somebody in that kind of situation?
Well, the kind of teaching strategies that emerge from this sort of approach, and most of them are applicable in any school environment, are strategies that utilize experiential learning to a high degree, project-based learning, culturally-based learning, place-based learning. And those strategies are as you do them differently in an urban multicultural school context, but these strategies are nevertheless applicable and can have beneficial effects in any schooling context, in any cultural context, as long as you're adapting to the cultural context that students are coming from. And in an urban area, that's going to be multiple cultural contexts, so you get involved in looking at the variations and helping students understand differences in perspective and history and talent and knowledge base and so on that can be drawn upon to liven up the rest of the curriculum. And we've done this in a variety of ways in rural schools in Alaska as well as in the urban schools here, and the results have been consistent in both contexts. Of course, you're going to do it different in a heterogeneous setting than in a homogeneous cultural setting. But to capitalize on the insights and successful strategies that teachers and community members have developed over the years, we worked with elders and native educators and others throughout the state for a period of 2 years back in the in the late 1990s to develop Alaska standards for culturally responsive schools, a set of standards and guidelines for teachers and school boards and administrators and everybody else regarding the kind of practices and strategies that that they can utilize to incorporate a cultural lens in what goes on in school. Those standards have been adopted by the State Board of Education along with the state content standards in the various subject areas, and schools incorporate these into their curriculum development effort and their in-service programs and so on, so that in addition to the content standards that drive curriculum in schools, the cultural standards provide a how to achieve the goal that the content standards spell out by utilizing that cultural and physical environment that you're working in. So we've tried to tie these pieces together in ways that make it easy, as easy as possible. It's not easy, mm-hmm. but easier for teachers to utilize that cultural context as a resource in their work.
Well, before we get talk about some specific, you know, tips for teaching cross cultures, I wanted to ask one other question about the first impression issue. And when you're talking about a multicultural classroom or, you know, multicultural students in a more diverse setting, how do you manage impressions then? What are your tips for managing first impressions then?
Well, again, students are coming from a community context, probably multiple community contexts within a given community, and are approaching school, and the whole purpose of school in different ways. So the critical thing for teachers is to teach in ways that accommodate and even celebrate that diversity, rather than trying to standardize things to the point where the most important aspect of students' lives, that is their identity, mm-hmm. who they are, where they fit into the world, gets ignored. The strategies that seem to work are the ones that tap into and build upon and strengthen students' identity. So to do that, you have to demonstrate as a teacher respect for that diversity in the community, the different forms of identity and so on, in your own behavior, if you're going to expect it from the students. So the kind of impressions you give to students when, you know, when they come into the classroom on day one, mm-hmm. Set up a set of relationships that will carry over into everything you do for the remainder of the year. And if students are in effect teaching the teachers as much as the teachers are teaching the students, if you take that approach,
mm-hmm.
and it means making yourself available in a way that students can feel comfortable and that you're accessible to help them deal with whatever it is their needs are.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the notion of colorblindness? I could see a faculty member saying, you know, I teach content, not culture, and so I don't need to know somebody's culture. I'm blind to culture because it doesn't have anything to do with my scientific content or whatever. What is your response to this idea of colorblindness?
Well, all you have to do is look at the distribution of student performance. If if you're taking that approach and all students are performing at a comparable level, and indeed they're coming in on an equal plane, then you know that, apparently that it's working. But that's not what the data says. Alaska Native students continue to be at the very lowest level in terms of academic performance of students not only throughout Alaska but throughout the country. So if that's the position you're going to take as a teacher, you need to be able to demonstrate that you're still able to reach all students in ways that they're all able to perform at the level, at comparable level. But that's not what's happening. So the approach that we've developed over the years that appears to make a difference is to not only acknowledge but to capitalize on as a strength the diversity of students' experiences in the classroom and utilize that as a foundation for all teaching, not just as another subject to add to the curriculum, but we have what we refer to as we have courses and curriculum resources and so on that utilize what we call native ways of knowing. Native ways of knowing have been documented now over the last dozen years or so in ways that teachers can recognize and acknowledge in their teaching and utilize as strengths in the classroom, different ways of knowing. So when you're teaching science, you use the traditional knowledge that people developed over millennia to survive in a very harsh environment to demonstrate that science is something that's practiced every day in the community. And you can find situations in the community where you can demonstrate the subject matter that would otherwise be taught from a textbook that's called for in the state science standards, but you starting with something that's there in the community that students can relate to. And that has been one of the few, if not the only, approach that has made a difference, a significant difference for Native students to capitalize on their strengths rather than punish them for their differences.
I wonder, could you share a couple more specific tips or advice for faculty who are teaching across cultures, who find themselves in that position?
Well, let me put it in the context of a charter school that we started here 4 years ago. The Effie Cochran Charter School is based, it's a 7 through 12 school, and it's based on the curriculum and the teaching practices in the school are based on Alaska Native cultural traditions and knowledge. And the whole curriculum is grounded in the Athabascan cultural practices and cultural traditions as reflected in the communities here in the interior of Alaska, the Athabascan area. So we have elders that are in the school on a regular basis. We have a fish camp, traditional, authentic fish camp that we're the family who lives there the elder by the name of Howard Luke. This is his home. It's where he grew up. This is where a community existed before Fairbanks was founded by the gold miners.
Hmm.
We incorporate that camp as though it's another classroom for the school. So activities that students say they're building a snow shelter for people hunting in the wintertime, they can go over to the camp and build a snow shelter the way snow shelters were built many years ago, and then learn the traditional skills that go with building a snow shelter and all the terminology associated with different kinds of snow, which is far greater than anything we have in English, and then link that to the scientific principles that are embedded in that snow shelter and how you keep warm and how you glaze the inside with enough heat to put an ice layer, create an icy layer that creates a very warm and comfortable place to be able to stay warm and survive a winter storm or whatever. In the shelter, students have caribou hides, the hide of a caribou that's been hunted and saved the hide. Caribou hide have considerably greater insulating qualities than other hides, and moose hides, for example. So one of the challenges for the students is to figure out what is it about caribou hides that led their ancestors to incorporate them as a insulating blanket that you can put down on the snow and be quite comfortable. And so when students get back to the school and they get out their microscope and take a look at the hair on the caribou hide, they find that, unlike moose hide hair, it's hollow. And its hollowness creates an insulating layer that the air in the hollow hair that they can then develop an experiment for a science fair demonstrating and checking out the differences in insulating value of these hides. So,
that's fascinating. Wow.
So you can use the cultural knowledge from the community to teach all subject matter as a launching pad to teach all subjects, not just adding it on to teach a little bit of history or culture or basket making or something like that.
Well, thank you so much for sharing the great work you're doing with us today. That's so fascinating, and I appreciate kind of a glimpse into that culture. On a personal note, you've been there for a long time now, so do you feel kind of native?
Well, no, I wouldn't pretend to do that, but I've certainly learned to appreciate things that aren't always obvious on the surface, but if you're working with people long enough over time, you see patterns and elements of cultural traditions that one doesn't see on a pass-through basis. So I've been very fortunate to have been able to work with a lot of elders and native educators who've certainly taught me a lot more than I've taught them.
Did you have any idea when you started out on your career path would end up being such a specialty in your work?
No, No, that just kind of happened based on opportunities and needs that came up along the way.
Well, thank you again for talking to us. Do you have any last words of advice or wisdom you'd like to share?
I think you've got sounds like a good project there, and I'd be interested in following up on what you're doing.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Okay, Elizabeth.
Bye. Thanks for listening to this installment of Teaching, Learning, and Everything Else. For more information, please visit our website at cat.xula.edu. That's cat.xula.edu. Until next time, this is Elizabeth Yost-Hammer.